It's a trap!
Hello, and welcome to episode number 83 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
So, Carson, we are in a bit of an X-Wing lull right now, as we have to wait those bitter months between the end of the store championship seasons and the start of the regional season.
Yeah, and I actually kind of like a nice little break between store championships and regionals, just because usually during the regional season, there's a lot of practicing to be had to make each of those regionals really count. So it's usually a pretty busy time of X-Wing for myself and you as well. So I like a nice lull before I jump right back into it again.
That being said, there's still a lot of X-Wing being played. We just saw the end of the U.S. National Championship. So we got a fair bit to talk about looking at the metagame here today. We'll talk a little bit about what we're flying, and then we're going to start an interesting discussion about taking risks.
Yeah, so let's get started.
So the metagame's been pretty consistent over the last couple of months, at least what we've seen both in Minneapolis, and now that we have the results from the U.S. National Championships, we're seeing a lot of the lists we would have expected to see at an event like this.
Yeah, so Nationals, obviously a big event. The lists you see here are probably going to pop up into your local game store.
And it's a lot of the most notorious characters we've had in the metagame in recent months. Nationals was taken by a Captain Nim Miranda Donnie list. We saw a lot of Lorix and Miranda Donnies in there. And still recurring forces like triple contracted scouts, Dengars, and Asaz Ventresses popping up all over the place. And recurring upgrade cards like cruise missiles and bomblet generator. They're new, but they've definitely
forgot the most important one, Veteran Instincts.
And Veteran Instincts, still a dominating force. So let's start by looking at that, too. So looking at the metagame overall, the key elements here. Obviously, we know the common ships here, the Captain Nims, the Lorix. But one thing I noticed scanning through all the lists from the top 64 at Nationals is just an insane number of Veteran Instincts. I mean, Veteran Instincts has been a powerful card since it was released and been a staple card for a lot of ships. But the pilot skill game has gone to a whole new level that I haven't really seen in X-Wing before.
Right, and that's all because of the Captain Nim, both Scum and Rebel, having that elite pilot talent slot, which we haven't seen on any other bomb-focused ship. The K-Wing, the TIE Punisher, and now the new Resistance Bomber all don't have elite pilot talent slots because I think game designers generally wanted some room for aces to be able to dodge bombs at the highest pilot skill. But somehow Captain Nim got an elite pilot talent slot, which allowed that pilot skill 8 ship to move all the way up to 10, meaning if you wanted to be able to outmaneuver those bombs, you'd be moving at either pilot skill 10 with a better initiative bid or pilot skill 11. And the only way to get to those places is using Veteran Instincts.
Yeah, and I think I want to draw attention to that too, because we all assumed, a lot of us assumed for the longest time that the reason that ships like the K-Wing and the TIE Punisher didn't have elite pilot talents was to prevent oppressive bombing at high pilot skills, and Captain Nim seems to just undermine all that with a pilot skill 10 bomber now. But like you're saying, Carson, now we need higher pilot skills and stronger bids in order to compete with this. We saw a bit of this from Nathan Ide's list at the North American Championship back in August, and then again, Paul Heaver taking the U.S. Nationals with Captain Nim and Veteran Instincts. It's really important here to have strong bids, even with high pilot skill ships. We saw that Nathan Ide's list where he took a 96-point list, so he had a 4-point bid with his Captain Nim and Corrin, and then Paul Heaver here with a 97-point list with his Captain Nim and Miranda Donnie. It's an interesting change. So what I used to experience in the game was oftentimes players would opt to take ships with Veteran Instincts that would get them up to pilot skill 10 in lieu of taking a bid, where taking the pilot skill 10 would be your counter to lists that had pilot skill 9s with a strong bid. Now we're seeing it go to the extreme of not only are you have to take ships at pilot skill 10, you also have to take a strong bid in order to compete with other ships at matched pilot skills.
Right, and this means if you wanted to play your pilot skill 9 ace that kind of requires an EPT different than Veteran Instincts, you're going to kind of struggle with that ace a bit, just because now being pilot skill 9 doesn't really mean much when half the meta is flying at pilot skill 10 or above, or they're at pilot skill 4 and 5 and don't really care about you being at pilot skill 9 either.
And we're seeing this manifest across lists here where we've got Darth Vader's running Veteran Instincts to get to Pilot Skill 11. We've got Dengar's running Veteran Instincts to get to Pilot Skill 11, where it's becoming almost a necessity there to give up on the possibly more efficient elite pilot talents in order to get that pilot skill advantage just so you can compete with Bomblet Generator Captain Nims.
But the meta is not 100% Nimless. It's also heavily featured by Biggs' low-risk squads, what we call the Selfless Rebels, using the Selflessness Elite Pilot talent that lets you discard it to take damage from a friendly ship's attack onto your ship with Selflessness.
And of course, Lorik's inherent ability to spend that reinforced token to add an evade result to another friendly ship at range one makes him a great damage mitigator in combination with Biggs. But we're even seeing him standing on his own, often paired up with Miranda Donnie and then either a Jess Pava or ships like some kind of Hawk.
Right. The Biggs-Lorik combination's really shown that it can support a lot of different archetypes. Even just Lorik alone supporting a ghost is pretty powerful over Biggs. A lot of versatility in those two ships in what kind of list can field them.
Well, and we're also seeing spawning from the high incidence of bombs and cards with spike damage like cruise missiles, a strong showing from ships with a lot of hit points. So we saw a lot of contracted scouts do quite well at U.S. Nationals, and we're seeing ships like Asajj Ventress or Ketsu Onyo in the Lancer-class Pursuit Craft, which of course has 10 hit points, 7 hull and 3 shields, do pretty well. And I think a lot of that is attributed to the fact that they can survive those multi-bomb drops.
Yeah, especially Asajj still doesn't really like bombs because she's really good at mitigating normal attacks coming at her with her two green dice plus the ability of Lots Razi crew to spend the attacker's stress token to add an evade result. That really makes her resilient to normal attacks where bombs still get to chip in there and undermine some of her value. But I think, yeah, having the 10 hit points still helps. She's not as great as she has been, but I think she can still hold her own. What I think the Shadowcasters really bring is a little bit durability, but also those control effects from the pilot abilities.
Yeah, and those control effects are especially valuable now that we're seeing a lot of small base ships out there with low agility so that they're a little more susceptible to being hit by attacks and allowing you to trigger these control abilities. All that being said, looking at, I guess, kind of my overall analysis would be we're seeing a lot of high hit point ships, and we're seeing a lot of spike damage from cruise missiles. We're seeing a lot of bomb damage at high PS from things like Captain Nim and Bomblet Generator, which has very much affected the ships I've been flying as of late.
Yeah, I personally haven't been flying too much recently. I've been messing around a bit with the Guns for Hire ships, both the Curax and the Star Viper, but obviously the pack isn't out for mainstream release yet, so I haven't been able to fly those at tournaments. But even then, I'm not sure how well, like, the Star Viper especially would do in this such a bomb-heavy meta, where it only has 5 hit points. I think the Curax has a better chance with those missiles, especially the new Harpoon missile is pretty good, and being able to take quite a few of those with Curax, I think, is pretty exciting.
Yeah, my lists have been tending towards a strong Alpha Strike. So recently I've been flying some combination of Quick Draw and Atai SF and Darth Vader and Atai Advance, and the third slot's a little bit in limbo for me right now. But obviously taking advantage of Veteran Instincts to get up to Pilot Skill 11, I have a Darth Vader with Veteran Instincts, Cruise Missiles, Atai X1, Guides Chips, and Advanced Targeting Computer. And then I've got a Quick Draw Atai SF with Veteran Instincts, Fire Control System, Cruise Missiles, Special Ops Training, and Guidance Chips. Leaning towards that Alpha Strike, the third slot's been a little bit trickier for me. I've been testing out with just a Tomax Bren type bomber with Veteran Instincts, Cruise Missiles, Extra Munitions, or Guidance Chips. Alternatively, testing out some Deadeye Pilot Skill 5 bombers, or even looking at a lower Pilot Skill bomber to get that ordnance in there too. Or even swapping that out for an entirely different third ship. I just feel like the spike damage right now is really important, especially when you need to take down ships like Dengar or Captain Nim quickly.
Yeah, the best strategy for taking on Captain Nim is, of course, to remove him from the table before he gets to drop bombs. That's always plan A, and cruise missiles do a pretty good job of following through on that strategy.
I will say, again, it's funny to me that I'm running ships at Pilot Skill 11, and I still feel the need to take a bid, because I just know that there's going to be other Pilot Skill 11s out there, and being able to reposition after your opponent is so important for ace ships like Quick Draw and Darth Vader.
Yeah, and especially those other Potsk-11s are probably also taking cruise missiles, and you really want to be the one who moves second in a cruise missile alpha exchange.
Yeah, that could very well mean the difference between taking an opponent's ship off the board or not even getting to fire your cruise missiles.
I did fly my Peritani variant with Paolo Gadali in it this past weekend and did pretty well. Fenrau is still quite a liability where just those 4 hit points with bomblets dealing direct damage and people's Nims had auto blaster turret, so it was pretty hard to keep Fen alive, but sometimes he did just enough damage to be worth it in the game. He does still do quite a bit of work against the selfless rebels, where turn after turn throwing 5 dice eventually wears them down.
Well, another problem you have with him, too, is he still hits pretty hard, but he is still susceptible even to things like spike damage from cruise missiles, where if he gets a pair of those coming at him at pilot skill 10 or 11, even if you can get him 2 focus tokens with the Tawny Mind Link, there's still a good chance that he's going to take some decent damage.
Yeah, my hope is I can't dodge all the cruise missiles. Hopefully they don't wipe him out, and then I just have to dodge bomblets. But Asajj did a lot of work. Her primary weapon, you know, just 3 attack dice, actually does a decent amount in this meta just because everything has such low agility values where just that consistent little bit of damage over time does add up. And then I gave Paolo Gadali the twin laser turret as well as just a Tawny Mind Link. And twin laser turret's pretty good right now. Once again, low agility ships, it adds on a lot of damage. And I used to run him with the dorsal turret, get up close and personal with cloaking device. But with bombs, you really don't want to get too close to your opponent's ships right now. So being able to stay on the outskirts was pretty helpful.
One synergy that I tried flying, but it's just not fitting in the metagame for me right now, is using a Darth Vader with, instead of like Veteran Instincts or anything, putting that Intensity on there. I think I talked about this on the show before. Running Darth Vader with Intensity, Cruise Missiles, TIE-X1, Engine Upgrade, and Advanced Targeting Computer, where you can do some hilarious shenanigans like take a 5 forward and then boost and then use Intensity to get a focus and then get a target lock for your cruise missiles. So you can go from like completely out of range to within range to target lock and shoot a fully modified cruise missile. Right now, the pilot skill is really killing me, though. I tried that at a tournament and pilot skill 10s and pilot skill 11s just took me down.
Yeah, so there's 2 ways you can play it. With this metagame, you can either embrace the pilot skill raise and try to be the one at the top, or you can kind of concede people are going to move after you. You might take some bomblets, but your ships will be able to weather the storm and return fire. So lists like an Expertise, Ray, and Miranda, I think, have some utility where both those ships have enough hit points to take some attacks. Obviously, Miranda doesn't want 2 cruise missiles being shot at her, but she could take 1 and maybe be okay. And then those ships still have a lot of power once you get into the late game, wearing your opponents down. And I like Rey, where she, like the Shadowcasters, has a lot of hit points, but then she also can return some pretty heavy shots back. And I think previously you wanted to have Rey always get in arc to be able to force damage through, but against ships like Nim, it's still not the end of the world. If he dodges your arc, you're still going to throw some damage out. Obviously, you lose a lot of your synergy and max damage, but it's still better than nothing.
Yeah, and that's one thing I will say about Nim. He's a very powerful, quite possibly overpowered ship, but he still does take damage. So if you can focus fire in on him, he doesn't really have any tricks to evade that damage. So if you can get a couple guns set on him, you can usually push out 5 or 6 damage in a turn for sure. I guess I'd say overall, what's interesting to me is I'm not really sure what's going to shake up this metagame. A lot of these synergies have persisted, with the exceptions of the new bomblet synergy coming out in the last release. I don't know if Guns for Hire is going to be enough to shake it up. Like you said, Carson, those ships are still pretty susceptible to bombs and spike damage. I think Harpoon Missile has a good chance of getting in there to break up some selfless rebels lists.
Yeah, it'll definitely put pressure on the bigs lists. It'll be interesting to see if the Pulse Ray Shield Curaxes can sustain enough to be able to deal with the bomblets. I do think the Ion Dischargers have a potential where Ion tokens really disrupt someone's ability to drop bombs because they're not revealing a dial, so they don't have the bomb drop trigger. I think there's definitely some potential there, but I think it still remains to be seen exactly what will happen when Guns for Hire does eventually get released.
Yeah, I think before we see any major shakeups to this metagame, we might have to wait till Wave 12 or possibly Wave 13 releases.
I'm hopeful for Guns for Hire.
Hey, listeners, time for a quick Patreon update. We've got some really cool Patreon news. We're just waiting for a little bit more confirmation. So we've got some cool stuff that we're going to announce within the next couple weeks. Just stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, we've got to announce our prizes for our October raffle.
Yeah, this month we're going to be equipping you to deal with the current meta. We have an alternate art Ketsu Ono from a seasonal tournament kit. Pretty cool bounty hunter character from Star Wars Rebels. I like to see them get, the more realistic art treatment.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool alt art, too. I was commenting to someone the other day how cool I thought that was. Just like the perspective they do it from. And it's, you know, a relevant tournament card right now, which is pretty cool to see. We're also going to be giving away two sets of two Veteran Instincts alt art upgrade cards. So this is the quote-unquote Rebel Veteran Instincts. And you'll get a pair of these so you can run your fancy Pilot Scale 10 or Pilot Scale 11 ships in style. So three different prizes given away this month. So if you want to be eligible for these, please go to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show at any level.
And now, back to the cast. So I wanted to talk about this topic of knowing when to take a risky chance or when to really kind of gamble on a maneuver. This past weekend, I had a situation where my Asajj Ventress had one hole left versus a Y-Wing with higher pilot skill due to my damage cockpit crit and three hits left. And the Y-Wing also had a weapons failure crit. And so I had a decision on whether or not to move in to take a shot on the Y-Wing in the turn where it would have to fix that crit. But that maneuver would have me go over a rock, which could be the end of my ship, or run away and disengage, which means they'd probably have the time to fix the crit, but I wouldn't have to go over a rock. I ended up disengaging and losing on that first turn. I got re-engaged. But I thought it was just an interesting scenario that made me think of there's a lot of times that pop up when the games aren't quite going your way, when you have an opportunity to make a big move. And sometimes that's the right decision. Sometimes it's hard to tell if it's the right decision. In my case, I think I would have lost regardless. But I think these are things to think about before you get into the scenario so that you are better equipped to deal with it when it does arise.
I think this is an interesting and a very important and fundamental topic when we're talking about X-Wing, where you'll often encounter decision points in your game where you can take maybe a safe maneuver or a cautious maneuver, but you have this potential here, if I take this risky maneuver and it pays off, that'll give me a huge advantage going forward. At the most basic level, and I want to start there for maybe players who are newer at the game, sometimes the simplest risks are just uncertainties you have about the way the ships move. So I'm not sure if this maneuver will clear an asteroid or this one might take me off the board. I wanted to start at that base level just to give people a general idea. When you're encountering scenarios like that where it's a level of uncertainty, more often than not, I would actually recommend taking that risky maneuver or risky decision just to see how it plays out.
Yeah, for me, why I really enjoy flying the Shadowcaster is I've spent so much time flying big base ships. I've landed on enough rocks with them that I'm now pretty confident on where their dial takes them. But I definitely had to go through quite a process of taking those risky maneuvers and just barely clipping that rock, which helped me for those next games down the road. And it does enable you, once you do solidify exactly where those maneuvers take you, to pull off some pretty surprising maneuvers your opponents didn't think you could pull off. But because, you know, you've taken those risky maneuvers, you know where that line is, you can really exploit that.
But eventually you will hit a certain threshold where the uncertainty shifts from your ability to read the game board and judge distances to the uncertainty falls on other factors like the result of a die roll or an opponent's die roll or certain cards resolving. And at that point, taking risks takes on a whole new dynamic. And then when you reach that point where you're more certain about your maneuvers but not certain about other game factors like the way asteroid dice will resolve or whether an opponent's going to be able to fix a crit or not, it becomes more about probability and risk reward rather than just that uncertainty that you had.
Right. And so now it kind of gets into the scenario of, because there is so much known information between players, you know the efficiency of your opponent's attacks versus your defense. You know the odds of bomblets damage distribution. And so most opponents respect your knowledge of those things to a certain regard and will discern their logical maneuvers based off of understanding you have some respect for the amount of threat they can do, be it their missile range or the range in which they can deploy their bombs. And you'll use that to choose what they think is the right maneuver. Now, if you then take some sort of calculated risk, you know what? I'm going to run into the bomblet. That's going to be fine. The reward is going to be worth that risk. Then you really can change the dynamic of the game and catch your opponents off guard.
Well, and sometimes the results of not taking even just mild risks, like going into the bomblet instead of avoiding it, can set you up for even more dramatic failures. When I was watching games that Nathan Ide, who won the North American Championship, he was flying a Advanced Sensors Captain Nim, and he had this really cool strategy that I tried to play around with myself. It's pretty difficult to pull off, but when it works, it works, where he had Advanced Sensors on Captain Nim and Engine Upgrade, Bomblet Generator, and of course Captain Nim's ability on the Rebel side allows him to prevent a bomb token from detonating. And what Nathan would do in multiple game matches I observed is the first round he would perform an Advanced Sensors boost, then perform a Talon roll, flipping around, and then dropping a bomblet. So he'd get pretty far forward in terms of movement, drop that bomblet, and then keep it from detonating with Captain Nim. And what this ended up doing most of the time was closing down otherwise open lanes that an opponent might want to use because they were afraid of taking that bomblet damage. And oftentimes they'd set up opposite Captain Nim because they wanted to focus down Captain Nim, but they'd see that bomblet and suddenly they would be uncertain of what to do and start taking a more circuitous route to reach that first engagement, which Nathan would then take advantage of with his Corn Horn and set up more favorable engagements for Nathan.
Right. And so that's kind of going into that your opponent's going to probably play around your logical optimal move is to avoid those bomblets. But there's times where, you know, if you go through it, you can get in a position where you can apply a lot of pressure on your opponent. And I think at most competitive levels of X-Wing, that's really where you're going to get the advantage from taking risks is because usually in a game of X-Wing, one person starts getting an advantage and that allows them to start putting pressure on their opponent. Now one player is chasing ships while another player is running away. And that pressure really dictates who's in the driver's seat of the game and who's being reactionary. And you really want to be the one in the driver's seat. That allows you to be the player who's forcing your opponent to make mistakes or suboptimal moves. And when you start losing in the damage race, sometimes taking a risky play can enable you to jump back into being the controlling aggressor player.
Well, and we use the phrase putting pressure on your opponent, and that's a really important X-Wing concept, not just for taking risks, but as a general rule of how you want to play. If you're in the advantage position, say you've destroyed an opponent's ship and they haven't taken one of your ships yet, and you have more guns on the table, you've got better positioning, that's not an opportunity to run away or be cautious. You want to keep pressure on your opponent so that they have to play at their absolute best and that you can continue to leverage your advantage and better positioning in order to close out the game. If you're winning and all of a sudden you start to turn cautious, that leaves a lot of room for your opponent to turn around and start putting pressure on you and potentially take the advantage back.
Yeah, and going back to my first example, I disengaged and allowed my opponent to maintain being the aggressor. And it ultimately worked out for him. I chose not to apply pressure. And, you know, I might have died on that rock, 50% chance there. But I, you know, didn't give myself the big opportunity to win the game. Yeah, a lot of odds kind of had to go in my favor. But that might have been my best window to win an otherwise already lost game.
Well, and I think that's also very important what you bring up. Yeah, sure, you could have flown over the rock and blown up right away. But when we're talking about probability and taking risks for advantage, I don't think it's actually wise to necessarily judge the quality of your decision based on a random outcome. So it might still have been technically the better decision to take the risk and fly over the rock with the hope of being able to push that damage through and gain the advantage again and keep pressure on your opponent. Even if you fly over it and destroy you, that might still have been the best decision, because a loss is a loss. So whether it's you lose there taking the risk or just lose the long game by playing cautious, you still lost the game. So it's better to try and take those chances that are going to shift around games for you.
Right, and obviously you want the majority of your games to go where you don't get into the scenario. You know, you start as the aggressor, your damage just snowballs, and you're able to close out the game. But that's not always how things go. There's a lot of great players in X-Wing, and there's a lot of tough lists out there. And every game's not going to go as well as you'd like. And so you do need some tools where you can dig out of at least some of the games that don't go your way.
Well, and to that end, taking risks on the winning end is more about keeping pressure, but taking risks when you're on the losing side is more about those are your only opportunities to turn a game around. So if whatever strategy you began the game with apparently fails, you lose a ship, or you really lose good positioning, suddenly your opponent's winning and they're putting a lot of pressure on you, those are the opportunities where you really need to take those risks, because changing up your strategy, doing something unpredictable, is likely your only way that you're going to be able to turn that game around.
Yeah, and actually in the previous game, I had a risky play that actually worked out in my favor, where my Fenrau was pretty quickly down to just one hull, because cruise missiles are pretty effective against him, and he was being kind of pursued by a Dengar, but because I was clearly disengaging and kind of looking like I was just going to use Fenrau to be a focus engine with a Tawny Mind Link for the rest of my squad, I decided I could take that turn to turn in and use Fen for one last attack. And so that maneuver did caught my opponent off guard. I was able to get Fenrau into a range one position against Dengar. Dengar did still end up destroying Fen, but the value I got from Fen's shot onto Dengar was enough for me to get back into the damage race and be able to close it out with the rest of my ships. Now, that could have gone the other way, and I could have just given him one of my ships without any gain. But the thing is, X-Wing is a very snowball-y game, so once you lose a little bit of ground, it can quickly spiral out of your control, and so you have to kind of assess when is the right moment for you to make your claim and try and create the scenario where the damage race will swing back in your favor.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Above all else, you got to remember that in X-Wing, unlike a lot of other games, the advantages aren't so slight all the time. Suddenly, the game will swing in different players' directions in huge ways. So since we have a finite number of game pieces on the board, lists typically have, what, two ships to five, four or five ships? Losing a ship is a huge part of it, because you're losing a good portion of your ability to do damage, and suddenly the game, like you said, will start snowballing against you. That's why you need to take risks so that you can rebalance that out or possibly gain that advantage again from your opponent. And you can really only do that by, to a certain extent, being unpredictable.
Yeah, so risk-taking in X-Wing is not as cut and dry as I'd like it to be. There's not always like a right answer.
Yeah, a lot of those decisions are going to come down to your feel for what's happening in the game, what list you're flying, what list your opponent's flying. There won't always be a technically best answer. It wouldn't be a risk otherwise, right? Like, you're taking the risk here to gain a larger advantage as opposed to playing defensively or getting a smaller advantage. But those advantages are significant, and if you can take a very calculated risk and it pays off, that'll be incredibly valuable in trying to win your game.
Right, and in a scenario where you're already losing, it's not like your opponent's going to stop attacking you so that you can get back into the game. You need to create opportunities where you are applying pressure. It's not going to work every time, but sometimes it's going to be just enough to turn around a game that you otherwise weren't going to be winning.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/Radio TCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoyed the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review, along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why other people might be interested in listening.
This week, we want to give a special shout out to Joe Raz, who left us a review on iTunes saying that Radio TCX was a no-brainer to listen to.
Thanks, Joe, and a huge thank you to everyone else who's already left us a review on iTunes. It really means a lot to us.
If you want to support the show directly and be eligible for our monthly raffles, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.